The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 21st of December, 2020. On the podcast today, Paul Hill, full-time investor, equity analyst, gives his view on the markets and what stocks he's been buying and will be holding for 2021. He talks about Sage, Roslyn Data Technologies. We also discuss Trackwise Designs, Escape Hunt, and On the Market. And Alan Green as well on the podcast today talks about Eddie Stobart Logistics, Nostra, Oil and Gas, Bidstack. We also discuss Gfinity. Plus, at the end of the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of other content. Check it out right there. Plus, it's our COVID-19 index. You can see that. Biggest rise of the day, Novacyt. Talking about the new strain of the vaccine, of the sort of virus, and I'm sure the testing kit picks it up. That's probably why they're rising. And biggest fall of the day is Symphony Environmental Technologies. They're taking up a legal challenge to the EU about single-use plastics. So check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me in audio and full technicolor on video, it's Paul Hill, equity investor, full-time investor as well. Paul, how are you doing, fella? You okay?
Yeah, morning, Justin. Happy Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to point out, people watching the video there, I did a video yesterday, I did point out, I haven't been in a fight, like you say. It looks like I have, but I had a fight with the Rapids in Centre Park. So, you know, my kids have dragged me down that non-stop, and I just put my head down too early, so on my belly, and whacked my head, and the kids are laughing their heads off. But there we are.
You should see the other guy, though, shouldn't you?
Yeah, I know, yeah, exactly.
But I understand you've been filling your Christmas stocking with a company over the last week, sort of, was it Trackwise Designs or something?
Yeah, what's annoying, I mean, my investing, I look at big trends that are lastable, hopefully the sustainable trends, you know, and the electric vehicle revolution that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to see a bigger trend than that. Every government pretty much in the world, like I said, stopping the petrol and diesel engines, so there has to be alternatives. The front runner is EV, of course, there's hydrogens, other forms, but EV seems where the money's going. And so if you look at things like Tesla, for example, the leader in the field, and the valuation of that, I think you could throw valuations out the window for companies in the right place, you know, because it's going to explode. But for 2030, pretty much, there's a line in the sand where they're stopping these cars. And so I just think anyone in the you know, with a good exposure to this sector will do quite well. And I've bought two companies. I haven't revealed the other one yet. I'm going to do it this week. But one is, basically, it's they got their own IP. I interviewed these guys at the IPO, and I liked them a lot, but I didn't really understand the tech. I thought, where's that?
Yeah, yeah.
I know, where's
they
that?
They do wiring, don't they? Patented wiring.
Yeah,
What performance benefits does it give an electric vehicle?
Yeah, so essentially, printed circuit boards are used, of course, in all sort of cars, electric cars these days, but they've got a globally unique capability to put unlimited length on these printed circuit boards, it's improved harness technology. It's better than anything, so they can do multi-layer, multi-length, and people can't do that. They're limited by I don't know how they do it, but they can do it multi-length. But it's 75% less weight than traditional tech used, and so it's also more precise. It's just got a huge amount of benefits, and they've got patents around the world, patents in the UK, US,
and weight's
China.
A really important factor for electric vehicles, isn't it?
Carbon zero,
if you want to get a longer distance, then you've got to reduce the weight.
And while researching this company, it's not just EVs, which is, of course, is a big play anyway. They've also got a contract with electric vehicle OEM in this country worth up to $38 million. Like I said, I talked to these companies at IPO, and I didn't understand the technology at the time, but I quite liked it. And I put it on my watch list. I always watched it. And, of course, they got this contract, and it went bananas a little bit. But it's not just EVs. It's also in the aerospace because, of course, even planes and all that stuff are heading towards EVs, and they've got to be light, very light, and so it'll help there. But they've also got contracts with GKN for wing icing or de-icing. The catheter market, I didn't realize how big the catheter market is. It's like it's going to be worth about $20 billion in 2025, and they're in talks with three big medical device companies, one in the US, and they say revenue should be coming from those in 2021-22. So they're well placed. I like, they always look, one of the things I look at is trend. Another thing I look at is IP. Does the company have a moat, as Warren Buffett would say? That way they can obviously get better margins, and of course that they'll be used. So I just like where they're at, their tech there. And so I bought some. I mean, I missed the initial ramp up in the share price, but they did a placing. They were at £3.60 a share, and they did a placing. They had to sort of raise quite a bit of money to increase their manufacturing capacity.
Did you buy in the placing?
No, I didn't. Do you know, I haven't bought in the placing for like, I think it was 6 years now. I haven't done any, but I just buy in the secondary market. But so they raised, with subscription, they were £12.6 million in total, around £2. And now they're at £2.60 a day. They were at £2.40 pre my video. So, to me, it's a good range. They missed the spike. The spike has gone, and they're flattening out a little bit. But I think, next couple of years, this is just the start, I believe, for the company like this. I think the contracts will start coming now, So,
It's quite interesting, actually, because I know you sort of like we talked about you were following a couple of EVs, sort of, and I had, just by coincidence, I spoke to Gervais Williams. The sort of legendary fund manager at Premier Miton, and he loves it. I'd never even heard of it before, and it's only the second time. You're the second person who's spoken about it. But Gervais has bought a 9% stake in it. So, I mean, he's obviously kicked the tires on the technology and has the same view that it's got a huge economic moat and a long trajectory ahead of it. And if it really does give the benefits of lighter weight for EVs, for planes, anything that's a critical angle, then it's going to do well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, they've got it's not just EVs, so they've got these other sectors as well, which they are in basically doing samples with. They said they're expected to announce deals, but they said basically, if you look, read between the lines, that they're very confident about the medical side of the business for 2021-22. So yeah. I think
you just can't value things. That's the problem for me.
Yeah. No. Well, at the moment,
it's faith. It's gut feel, isn't it?
Yeah. And at the moment, like, literally, they will be doubling the revenues pretty much from on forecasts, of course, from this year to next year with that EV deal alone. And I think the brokers put a £4 target on it. That's without any other contracts. And they've had 20 times EBITDA, that is. I mean, and do you know what? I think if you're in the right space, and I'll just say which the other company is, but the other one is even more hyped. And the valuation on the one I bought is just ridiculous. But do you know what? It could do 10 times where it's at the moment, looking at that space. It's so hot, the space this other company's in. But I don't want to say it quite yet.
Well,
but,
I mean, let's be clear about it. A big truck, an HGV, is going to, if you electrify that, it's going to have masses of wiring.
You've probably
got literally 100 miles of it.
I've
actually also just been on my filling my stocking as well, but less exciting and less high octane than you.
What is it? Come on.
This morning I bought, to buy the phone, I bought Wisely. I bought shares in Sage, which basically make accounting software and stuff. And the reason...
That's a lovely fit for you. You are a numbers guy. You're a spreadsheet guy. You love all that. Sage investment.
What's interesting is that, all this work from home, work from anywhere type of trend, and digitization has driven all the big sort of cloud stocks, the likes of, Microsoft, it's driven Intuit, it's driven Zeros, and all these kind of guys. So actually rocket levels. And these guys, their shares have actually reduced. They've fallen this year by about 15-20%, and the reason is because the company in November finally decided to grab the bull by the horns, which is why I've actually bought back in. But it surprised the city, and what they said is that they actually want to accelerate their top line growth, and the reason why they want to do that is because their small medium sized clients and customers have indicated to them, which I can totally understand, is that going forward, because of the pandemic, they want to digitize all of their business, all their operations, which makes total sense. But their first priority this year for those businesses has just been communicating with their employees and doing those first line IT systems and digitization. The second line, which is what they do, which is the accounting, HR, payroll, VAT, tax, and they do HR systems as well. That all those are coming in next year. And so the opportunity for the board and the company is actually to increase the cloudify their product, which is already 60-65% cloudified. They've got 90% recurring revenue streams, and also to drive, you know, top line through sales and marketing. So they're putting some extra cost. Now, normally, I mean, you're sort of like an expert at everything accounting as well. I understand that. But normally when it comes to software and tech, if you put money into R&D, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really drive your profits down because you capitalize it, because you see it over long term. These guys are super prudent and super conservative. And therefore, they're putting an extra chunk of R&D in and they expense it all in the first year. And so it's driving. So it's artificial. I mean, there's no difference between, you know, sort of what they're doing and what other tech companies were in the past, other than they're taking all the hits straight away. And that scared the city and drove the shares down 15%. And why they're below, they trade below where they were at the start of the year, which frankly is nuts.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart. They've had four, if you look back in from 2018, they had sort of three big dips. And it's always gone to this level, and it's bounced back quite aggressively from this level. So this is a good level to buy into. So they dropped off massively, gap lower on their final results, didn't they? Really gapped lower.
Yeah, they did. Well, that was because it was simply because they surprised the city by saying they're investing to accelerate top line growth, which is what I've been watching this company for some time, which I've been saying for ages. That's what they should do, and the board have. I think they've been wanting to do it for some time, but because of the shareholders have not allowed them to invest for growth as much as they would like to, then they haven't been able to. But now they've finally been given the green light. Look, boys, you've got to go and get the top line moving. And I think this can grow effectively next year and the year after. I mean, I haven't got in my numbers, but that's sort of like, you know, low single digits, double digit organic growth. If this does that, and with the drop-through rates, the EBITDA drop-through rates, which is about 30-40%, and they've got gross margins, unit economics of more than 90%, then I think this will be valued at 4, 5, 6 times sales. I mean, just give you an indication, Microsoft's on 10 times sales, Intuit is on 12 times sales, Xero's, I think, is on about 18 times sales. Even Oracle's on, and it doesn't even grow Oracle, it's on 5.5 times sales. So it isn't difficult to appreciate that this is a huge sort of like, there's a big value gap between them and their peers. And I actually think their market is still way behind the big boys in coming to digitization. Because if you think about it, the smaller guys have just done what's been urgent. And in the pandemic, the small, medium-sized companies, which is their real sweet spot, have still got all that to come, particularly the back office. And the pandemic, if it's done one thing, it's incentivized them to get into the cloud. Yeah. So I actually think they're in a perfect place here. And I totally agree with what the board are doing in terms of investing for the future. And that's why I bought in this morning. So, I posted it on social media and stuff, my numbers and my rationale. But I think this is not a sort of like a high octane stock that's going to multi-bag in a year. But I think you can, I'm going to hold this for 5 or potentially 10 years. And I could easily see this as a 10, 15% per annum return type of stock, including a 3% dividend deal. It could well double in 5 years and go on. And if somebody buys it, which has always been the sort of the perennial bride left at the altar to, you know, potentially acquisition, you know, people who want to buy the company. But I could see somebody buying this for, you know, I mean, it's only market cap's about $6.5 billion. But you could easily see how it's a drop in the ocean at sort of 10 billion, and then you can scale it across the world.
How big are your pockets? It's a drop in the ocean of 10 billion. Wow.
Well, I know. But anyway, it's a FTSE 100 company. Yeah. It's at a big discount to peers. And I actually think it's going to accelerate top line growth because it's got some real, you know, tailwinds. Mm. And I think the city has misunderstood it. Because I'd give a pat on the back to the board to invest for growth, given the circumstances of the pandemic. Now seems a perfect timing, and actually they got totally stung by it.
Yeah, but even if you look at the chart, you think, wow, whenever it's gone on this level, it's just snapped back. Almost, you know, it's almost been oversold, but also realised and got back in. It's like, you know, so yeah, it looks good. And are you still, Rosslyn Data had some news out today, didn't they?
Yeah, no, Rosslyn, I've still got those, you know, I'm a long-term holder. It came out with a really nice, they just cloudified their customs declaration software. So we all know it's exactly what companies don't need. Mm. They haven't been able to get product through because of obviously COVID and all the trucks are backed up at the ports and stuff and they're totally clogged up simply because of COVID. And now they've got to fill out a shed load of or mountains of red tape and documentation. Now, what the beauty of Rosslyn software is that it allows all these companies to automate that process and to pay their import-export duties along with filing all the relevant papers and reports and stuff and to meet all the regulatory authorities all in the cloud anytime, anywhere and without having to get sort of like, you know, flustered about it. And they've just launched it today. Now, how big is this going to be? Nobody knows. But there are 200,000 companies, according to Rosslyn in their announcement, just in the UK, who for the first time will need to fill out this type of customs declarations and documentation. Mm. So that's a massive, that's a pretty big addressable market. And they're probably only now thinking about, actually, we don't want to do this manually every single time. How big is it going to be? Nobody knows. But I think you could probably see, you'll probably get the answer within the first year and maybe even the first three to six months, because I think in January and February, a lot of these companies will just say, actually, we're not going to do this manually. We're going to do it, you know, basically have it automated. So I'm really quite positive about that software. And they could see some real benefits and kick through and have materiality quite soon in 2021. Yeah. But, we'll wait and see.
Do you know what? One of my plays is a contrarian play. I mean, and you know, Escape Hunt a while back. They were doing very well.
Yes, they came out with news, didn't they?
Yeah, they were doing, you know, like I said, they've been hampered. They've still been opening sites. They've got cash to open sites, of course. And they now are opening sites like at good premium, high footfall areas they couldn't afford before. Because landlords now of these areas, of these malls, these shopping malls, are crying out for new tenants because the high street traditional, so people sell things, you know, and they haven't got online strategy. It's very competitive, of course. Amazon is killing everyone pretty much unless you've got a very good online presence. But so then we are now getting, you know, landlords coming to us from these shopping malls saying, do you want to come back and look at this place? Because it's a lot cheaper. You don't have to put down any rent. But what's encouraging? So even though they are still opening physical sites, but of course the lockdown is hampering that, they came out with, in April, and I think a good team will always find a way somewhere. You know, if you've got a good product, it'll always find a way to market it. And so in April, they decided, you know, lockdown was happening, we're going to try a digital version, a remote escape room kind of type of, you know, offering, just to sort of limit the downside on the physical sites. But it turns out it's gone a lot better than they thought. And they said, and even beyond COVID and Christmas, they're saying now that it's gone very well. And they've done, nearly in December alone, they've done 200 bookings comprising over 1,000 corporate teams and 6,000 individuals as testament to the scalability. And this is digital. So this gives another level to the scalability. This is the blue sky side to the physical side. They said, as testament to the scalability of the products, the largest attendance in a single game had 347 people split between 57 teams playing in the same game. That's amazing.
I'll give you anecdotal evidence. When we were having dinner with my two daughters last night, at home, and they said, oh, you know, what about booking up Escape Hunt? You know, this was, and then my wife said, no, it's all closed. And then she says, what about doing it online? And then, of course, it comes out with the... So I just think a lot of people want to do exactly what you've just said. Mm. And, you know, it's just an example of the strength of the brand for Escape Hunt. And people want, you know, a bit of escapism and an adventure. Mm. And if you can have an adventure in a lockdown, in your own house, and pretend to be, I don't know, like Harry Potter or Wonder Woman 2 or whatever it is, then it gives you a bit of fun. that is a bit more exciting than charades or pin the tail on the donkey, you know?
Well, you look at all these big companies around the place, you know, mid-sized, medium-sized corporate, you know, companies that normally put on a bit of a, you know, a Christmas do. You know, they can't do it this year. And now, they've done this, and it's like with anything else. You try Zoom once just as a workaround, and all of a sudden, it becomes part of the actual routine. So you think, in fact, next year, why do we have to get everyone else from around the country, from around the world, bring them over to London or whatever, or, you know, we can just do it online. And it costs a lot less money. And I think, like they said, that the team there, Richard, the CEO, says, this, you know, is becoming, we're going to invest more in this, and it's become a growth area for our company. And they said, beyond Christmas and coronavirus pandemic, it will be one of those things people will do if they can't all make it to one sort of venue or event. And they also said they're going to look down via learning conferences as well. So it's so much opportunity, this. And I see this as the blue sky growth side of the business. And very encouraged. I just think, you know, good teams find a way sometimes. They pivot in some way.
And it's not a big leap of faith. Yeah. And I know you've talked about it a lot and stuff. But when you look at esports and you look at all of these virtual gaming, you know, with the goggles and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. It's not a leap of faith to do it in reality, which is what you're doing essentially. Yeah.
They've got that already. Or in some of their venues, they've got VR games, VR escape games, and also outdoors. When you can go, it's almost like, do you remember Pokemon a while back? Went nuts a couple of years back.
I do.
Well, at the moment, you can do that in any city. You can go into one of their venues and you can say, I want to do an outdoor adventure. And they've got a VR thing. You walk around the city and do it that way. So there's so many more sides to this than just the escape room itself, which were growing anyway. And like I said, I think 50% growth, owner operator sites in the UK before lockdown. So there's demand there for an experiential sort of treat for people there beyond sort of bowling or cinema. So I think this is one of those things. But again, it's got that digital side to it, which is encouraging. But I like it. I thought it did very well after I covered them and did very well. But it's starting to roll over. The more these lockdowns happening, it's starting to roll over. But they realise now it's not just physical sites here, it's digital. So they can cope in a lockdown. And let's be honest, if you look at the wider people, I look at the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, and they were saying there's a Whitehall government source apparently said that this should get approval by the 28th or 29th of this month. Now that's the game changer, because like I said, it doesn't need special storage, minus 70 supply chain issues. And if they can do that, they're talking about pretty much a several million a week. And
million doses.
Yeah, several million doses a week of people. And of course, they start with the most vulnerable. And I think you do that within 10, 12 weeks, you know, it's 5, 6 million people. That covers the NHS staff, carers, and the extremely vulnerable people who are basically regarded in a rude way called the bed blockers. Once they stop taking up beds in the NHS, then we can unlock, you know. So I think March time, before March, we'll be back to normal, hopefully. And again, I mean, hopefully, I don't know if it's a rumour or what, but it's a white, government source said, hopefully they'll pass the MHRA passing on
20th. It'll be for a new year.
That'll be good.
So what are you sort of like looking at for 2021 then?
I'm happy what I got. I mean, do you know what? My portfolio, the only worry I had in my portfolio was being, the sort of escapant, really, because that was, the real economy was hooked to that. But now they've got a digital presence as well. It doesn't matter. So, but I've got, I'm covered in Gfinity. I've got Plarium Imaging, which is medical tech, which apparently they're going to get an answer on their, they've requested an express review on their NDA to the FDA. And that happens within 60 days. But apparently it's more like 74. Plus you've got all these COVID testing companies, submitting their... So the FDA are apparently drowning in applications at the moment. So that's overdue. That should be any day. So if Plarium get express review on their imagery software and, well, NDA, the device, that'll reduce the road to commerciality from 12.
Have you got any cash to deploy at all next year, or are you fully loaded out on stock?
I'm fully loaded out. I'm literally having to move around stock. So I've got two EV plays pretty much. I've got MedTech in Plarium. I've got eSports in Gfinity. I've got Leisure sort of, and now Tech with Escape and Trackwise Designs. I got On the Market as well, which came out with a nice little update. I thought they're still growing. Their revenue's still growing by 20%. And when you take the fact that we've had lockdown for 3 months. That's good growth, you know.
And it is brilliant. Yeah. It's a good company to be honest.
And I said, even if, I mean, I think if you look at what they said, they're going to do no less than 22.5 million in revenue and profit of 1.5, no less than that. But so that's 20% growth anyway with the lockdown happening. But if you look at those figures, they're still only charging about 130 quid per agent if you marry across. So even if they convert, you know, I said 10,000 of that 14,000 they've got signed up, that's 36, you know, a million next year. That's 60% growth if they do that. But I said, even if they get that 130 quid to 166 quid, that's still achieving 20% growth again. So they don't have to do a hell of a lot to still keep ratcheting up this growth. And the website traffic is going up. So I think it's all going in the right direction. The new CEO just come in, so we'll see what he does. He's got a background in state agency and all that stuff. So we'll see.
It's converting all of those agencies that are currently non-paying into paying ones.
And then so they don't have to.
They don't get your ARPUs up, won't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've still got about 25% cash. So
have you? I'm struggling. I'm literally. I'm just trying to find cash, you know, by shifting some stock around sometimes. And so that's why it took me so long to sort of, I wanted to get half a decent position in some of these EV plays, but I didn't have any cash. So I would sort of sell a little bit here and there. And it's annoying, really. Just you know, portfolio rotation a little bit, that's all.
The area that I'm looking for is medtech and healthcare and drugs and biotech and anything like that. I mean, if you get the Democrats coming into the States, they start hitting a lot of the big pharma boys with price controls, which is what they've always been talking about, then you may get an opportunity to buy in. But that's the part of my portfolio that I'm looking for. I've got now software and tech, and I'm pretty happy with that. I've got my builders, which are, you know, basically my Taylor Wimpey, which I think will do well next year. I've got a bit of the old economy, which I think just as a value play, the, you know, your Lloyds and your Aviva. And I'm saying I'm fully loaded into tech and software now, in terms, particularly on the enterprise space, big cap with Sage, and obviously Rosslyn, which is small, you know, is a smaller cap play. I've got the payment side, e-payments, which is on the Equals, and I've got a bit of industrials as well. So I've pretty much covered to a certain extent. Yeah. Northbridge, as we talked about last time, but it's the medical side I'm looking for. And that's the key, I think. You know, you and I both sort of like, we're not wedded to diversification, but, and that's why we have conviction plays, but we do realize you do need some diversification, but it's not buying diversification for the sake of it. It's buying what you think is going to do well on the secular trends going forward and fits into the long-term tailwinds. So you've gone for EVs, you've gone for medical, but you're picking and choosing. None of us have gone into oil and gas, you know, big way.
I see on Twitter a lot of traders are in oil and gas, and I'm saying it's got to go north. And I suspect midterm it will go. I think share price, a lot of these companies will go because they've been so battered down. But of course, a longer term play. It may take another 10 years. But there's going to be slowly less demand from
them. And neither of us have got sort of like your classic department stores, M&S's and stuff like that, because both of us believe, regardless of the actual price, the value of that whole sector is going down long term. Yeah. And you don't want to, you can trade it, but when it comes to fundamentals,
that's a difference,
It's the King Canute. It's the King Canute syndrome. You may be able to hold it back for a couple of minutes, but long term you're gonna drown, aren't you?
I say a lot of times, if you, difference between an investor and a trader, there's plenty of trade opportunities in these oil and gas plays. But for me, if I'm looking 3 to 5 years down the line of a trend, that's not the right trend for me. that's a downward trend slowly. And if you look at, even you can look it up on the energy EAI website. Oil demand. I mean, it's a big spike next year. Apparently, it's increased by 2 or 3% oil demand, but then it slowly goes down to 1%. 0.75% every year for the next 10 years. The demand for oil slowly goes down. So that's the trend, you know. And I think a trend is a friend always. You know, go for long term strong trends, and that's going in the wrong direction.
And just finally. How's your portfolio done this year? Because you were up about 20% at one stage, weren't you?
I was up, a bit more than that. I think I was up about 30%, but it's rolled over a little bit in the last few weeks, and I'm still up over the year. But But I'm thinking, hopefully, I just genuinely think if we get this, you know, the Pfizer moment that happened, that we're, all the stocks are rallied in the right places, I think when AstraZeneca comes out, if they get a pass on this, and the rumours are on 28th, 29th, that's consistent with the Santa rally. Santa rally is traditionally far last five trading days of the year. Yeah. So if that comes into that, and of course we have bad news right now, but we're going to, you know, a couple of days, we'll, this news will sink in about the, you know, about tier four and all that stuff, and Dover will be unlocked then. But if we get good news on that vaccine, the COVID vaccine, the AstraZeneca Oxford, I think we'll see a big rally over the next couple of weeks in the right stocks, because that is a game changer. That is, you know, they could distribute that massively. Man, that have, you know, football stadiums, people being vaccinated, football stadiums, yeah, all that kind of stuff. So I think that'll be a big game changer. And it fits, if they do it, if they can, someone tell the Department of Health that, try and do it, you know, on the 27th, 28th, because that'll play into the Santa rally. You know, it really works for the stock market.
Who cares? Yeah. Who cares? But yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I actually think that sort of 2021 is going to be good. I mean, I haven't done as well as you. I think I'm about 5, 6, 7, or 8% down this year. But frankly, in the grand scale of things, of 20, 25 years of investing, it's small beer.
Yeah,
and, you know, you've got to look at it in that under that lens of sort of like, you know, go forward. And I'm very positive about next year based on the same things as you. In fact, if you're in the right areas that will benefit from a recovery as they remove the social distancing and the lockdown measures, then we'll do really well. Experiences will do well. People will go on holiday. There'll be continued.
Yeah, I think we are. We're booking now. You know, genuinely, we can't wait to find a bit of sun. We went to Centre Parks because we had we always book a week in the sun before Christmas, just because I hate the darkness and I love a bit of lights, and, you know. So we always book a place away in the sun. We haven't been able to do it. We've cancelled about two you know, abroad holidays. And so, you know, we are gagging. We've booked another one now for April. Hopefully everything will be fine for then. But I think people will want to get out and do experiential things again. And just, you know, yeah. So I think the economy will start, you know, it'll jumpstart, I think, next year. By Q2, I think, Q2, I think everything, hopefully, if the vaccines play out. I know people are saying about this virus, you know, it's mutating. But it's mutated, apparently, the 1,200 variants of coronavirus already anyway, but they still got the protein spike, still reacts to vaccines, and coronaviruses are more stable than flu viruses. That's why flu viruses, new vaccine every year, not that effective, you know, but 40 to 60% effectiveness. So we're still way more effective with our vaccines for this than we are for flu viruses. So I know when people are largely in cash on Twitter because they're deramping and trying to scare, saying, I saw someone said this could be like the Spanish flu. And I thought, first of all, that was 100 years ago. Tech wasn't as good as it was now, you know, med tech and all that stuff. There's so much many more advances in that area. Secondly, flu virus and coronavirus are different. Like I said, I didn't know this. I was reading about it, but the stability of coronavirus is a lot more stable, apparently. It doesn't mutate as fast as flu viruses. So if they can get a handle on the flu virus, they can get one on the coronavirus. It's it's just a matter of time, that's all, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well. Okay.
Marvelous.
Okay. Well, we'll chat in the new year.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Look forward to hearing your second EV play.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get that out. And don't forget, if you're watching on video and you want the next one to your inbox, hit that subscribe button and the notification bell. And if you're watching listening on audio, you've missed my big red nose. So that's a bit. Paul, have a nice Christmas and speak to you later.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're on, Al.
Hello, Justin. I'm fine. Thanks. I just want to say at the start, get well soon. Gav, a great buddy of ours, one of our riding group. He's a serving police officer in Brighton. His partner caught COVID and she's recovering. But Gav had to go into hospital for oxygen treatment. And he is a big, fit guy. I mean, he's a lovely bloke. And we just wish him all the best. So I just want to get there in the start.
Yeah, do you know what? It's funny, this is virus, you know, and who it affects and who it doesn't affect. Like I said, most people, I don't know, I was watching the TV today, but, you know, everyone's locking down around sort of Britain because this strain of virus is more contagious.
Yep.
And yet he was saying, Grant Shapps, he said, I don't know if you believe him or not, but I mean, he was saying that he's a transport secretary, of course, but recently, before this tier four came in, there was a friend of his had a sort of socially distanced, sort of minimal wedding, 15 guests, that's all. And just after the wedding, a lady had to go for an operation and she had a coronavirus test as part of that. And she tested positive. She didn't know she had it. She didn't feel ill. So she contacted the rest of the wedding party. I said, get yourself checked out, because I've tested positive. Don't know where it came from. And 11 of them out of 15, you know, it's in the southeast. It's where this virulent strain is going around. Tested yeah. positive, and none of them felt any effects from it. So it's odd how it affects some people. And of course, we know it has. Well, in fact, like the flu, flu takes yeah. out, it kills a lot of old people every year. You know, it for a young healthy person doesn't. You know, you feel a bit rough for a few days, but the older you get, the more it affects you generally. And so it's like that, you know. But of course, we haven't got the vaccine. That's why it's worried. That's why the beds are filling up in NHS hospitals. But yeah, it's quite worrying. It's how you said, Gav there doesn't seem to have any underlying health conditions, but he's being hit by it. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's, maybe that's, did you say he's a big fella, really big fella? Do you say that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm 6'2" and a half, so Gav's what, 6'3" and a half, but he's also, you know, he's a big guy as well, you know, and
what do you mean, he's heavy? He's got a bit of weight, is he? Carries a bit of weight?
No, he's just, well, yeah, I suppose he's bulky, but I mean, he's
because but people like they say it does affect, if you look quite biggish, it does affect you, doesn't it? It hits you a lot harder, apparently. So, yeah.
Well, I think, but I mean, he runs, you know, so he keeps himself fit, but I mean, yeah, you know, he's a big guy. I mean, I know, you know, if there's trouble in Brighton or in a pub or whatever, yeah, you know, often Gav's out there on the front line and he'll be first in, you know, first in with the flak jacket and the stab vest and all the rest of it, you know, and the other siding behind him. He's that sort of bloke, but he's super fit. But yeah, it's just the fact that, you know, he's the last guy I would have expected to have gone down and to have been hit so badly. You know, it just, I think it just reinforces the message this Christmas that we have to isolate. When you see those, David Burton put up a picture of some idiots in Oxford Street and Regent Street. And it just made me really angry. I just thought they're so bloody stupid and so.
Yeah, I know. And do you know what? If they knew someone, all these, you know, COVID idiots out there, there's plenty of them, generally a bit thick, who thinks there's conspiracy going on. Just speak to someone, work in the NHS in an area that's affected, at high infection rates, and you realise it isn't a joke, and, you know, it isn't a conspiracy. They generally are having problems, and people are working long shifts. And like I said, I've heard people say, well, why don't they use Nightingale hospitals? That's a lot of rubbish. The thing is, they don't have the staff. They don't have the staff. They're literally in these areas, in the actual hospitals, they're overrun. They don't have the staff in the actual hospitals. They can't afford to put those staff in these Nightingale hospitals because they've got everyone hands at deck. So I hate these, you know, people with a lack of research, small heads, small brains, saying, it's all to do with Bill Gates inserting chips into you. Are you kidding me? Bill Gates does not care where you go. He said, generally, most people's lives are quite boring and quite dull. He does not care. And most of your stuff is online anyway. If you're on Facebook or you're on social media and you're spreading these rumours, people know about where you are anyway. You're leaving a digital footprint. You know, your credit cards, wherever you spend, you're leaving a digital footprint. So you don't need to inject a chip via a vaccine to create a panic. Just, I can't believe how thick some people are, these conspiracy theories. Really are. It's annoying. And you got literally nurses crying, saying, you know, physically and mentally, it's tearing us apart. And and we need a vaccine out there very quickly. You know, and I just think that really annoys me. Anyway, let's get on. I think we've gone off the track a bit here. But it affects the economy. And that's another thing, you know. People are complaining about locking down, saying it's affecting the economy. Well, listen, abide by the rules and we'll have less infection, you know, get a vaccine and done, and we'll be unlocked faster, you know. Denying it all will not help, you know, it doesn't help at all.
Get a vaccine, if you have to go out, wear a mask, keep your distance, you know, all of that stuff. And yeah, you see pictures such as that one in Regent Street and Oxford Street, it just makes my blood boil. I just think, you know, goodness me, don't you people get it? You know, you've got the nurses and the doctors, and then you've got the police force, the fire brigade, all of the essential services there to help, you know, they're ready, and these are the people that are really paying the price. So for Christ's sake, please don't be selfish. Anyway, we digress.
Marvellous. So let's talk about stocks. What are you looking at, Al?
Okay, so as of course Europe shuts us out things are getting difficult. I thought I'd bring a transport company to the fore, a logistics company, which will no doubt have be affected to some degree by the shutdown. But on the domestic front, it's doing very well indeed. We have spoken about this before, and of course this is a recovery play, and I think
has it recovered?
Yeah, it has indeed. It's just raised a load of money too. But so Eddie Stobart, ESL, Eddie Stobart Logistics. Of course, this company has been through
The share price hasn't recovered. It's like down. It's still down low, isn't it? Is that 8.2p?
8.2p. Yeah, that's right.
When he last talked about it, it was like in the same area, wasn't it? It wasn't anywhere.
It's been lower than that. It's also been higher too. So
I like that. Yes. How was your stock pick? Well, it's been lower, but it's been higher too.
Okay. So I'm not going to sort of go into all the details, all the events that happened, but suffice to say, Wincanter made a bid back in 2019. They then discovered there was a hole in the accounts and the company needed money urgently. DBay Advisors came and injected $70 million. What that then meant was a new company was set up that owned Eddie Stobart, iForce, Logistics People, Speedy Freight and the Pallet Network. They owned that new company, Greenwise Acquisitions, owned 51%. The Eddie Stobart PLC became a cash shell. So, of course, the value at that stage was half. But this is the company still at the half year, turned over $416 million, delivered underlying EBITDA growth of 363% to $16.5 million, and were starting to cut loss-making contracts. So this is, of course, through the year. So this is a company, of course, prior to the black hole being discovered, had a valuation getting on for $1 billion. We've now got a valuation of the 32 million. So obviously, how the mighty have fallen on the one hand. On the other hand, we have to ask if there is a recovery opportunity here. They brought in a guy called Adrian Collins, who's a finance veteran. He's worked with Lion Trust, Gartmore, with Bahamas Petroleum, TriStar Resources. Adrian has come in as chairman to oversee the transition. Now, of course, with normal AIM rules being a cash shell, the company has to declare an investment. That was delayed due to COVID, but the company announced on December the 9th placing an open offer to raise $16 million at 5p. The company has now converted into an investing company, raised $9 million via the placing, and also an open offer at 5p. So as a shareholder, I get 37 additional shares at 5p for every 100 that I hold. So Greenwise Acquisitions, the holding company, also took up their allowance as well. They subscribe for 77 million new shares and will take up their open offer entitlements as well. And of course, you know, this is a milestone for the group because it's now become an investment company, and of course retains its shareholdings in Eddie Stobart Limited, iForce, Pallet Network, and so on, but also has the opportunity to expand into other areas, possibly make further acquisitions and so on. So going back to the numbers again, in October, the company announced half-year revenues of $416 million. This is, of course, Eddie Stobart and strong EBITDA. But also, the company said there were further benefits to come. It was shedding loss-making contracts. It had initiated the paydown of the debt mountain of $242 million and was also set to repay a loan note that had also been issued in December 2019, following the DBay investment. Also, new contract wins with Morrisons, McBride, Hillebrand, Nike, Amazon, and there were positive performances from the other companies in the group, iForce, Pallet Network, and Logistics People, all contributing to cash flow going forward. So, it's still, in some sense, a work in progress, but the company is has made solid progress. Of course, it delivers for Tesco. It's the logistics supplier to Tesco's and amongst all the others that I mentioned. And going forward, I think does offer an exciting, albeit speculative, investment opportunity to recover some of the lost ground in the listing. And if you take into account the fact that the Eddie Stobart entity and all the associate companies are half owned by the PLC, which has now become an investment company, along with Greenwise Acquisitions, to have a valuation of 31 million against a company that was worth some just under a billion prior to the problem in the debt hole being discovered in the accounts. I do believe there is some scope for further recovery there, and the shares have already popped up as high as 14p on the news of the fundraising, and I hope and expect to see further progress as we go into 2021.
Why do you like this company, Al?
Well, again,
is it just recovery? Is it a recovery play? You think it's a viable recovery play?
It's a recovery play, pure and simple. And as a shareholder beforehand, I've now got additional shares as a result of the open offer, which I've taken up, and I've also subscribed for a few more. And as a brand in the sector, it's the leading brand. You know, it's an iconic name. It's
But haulage and logistics and all that, it's a very competitive area. Margins are very short. I mean, there's nothing specialist about this company now, is there? It's just hard, isn't it? I mean, why wouldn't you go for a company with some kind of IP, you know, higher margins, growing, rather than a troubled company that's been knocked down and seemingly, you know, it's not going to be an easy road for them ahead?
Well, when you've got a company that continues to generate revenues, as Stobart's is, a lot of companies carry debt. You know, that's a fact.
And it's got debt. Yes.
Yeah. It's got debt, but it's carrying that debt.
I've just added one of my filters. I've updated it. I avoid companies with debt. Because I just think, do you know what, and I always say this, and Warren Buffett says, you know...
It's how the debt's being managed, though.
Yeah, but Warren Buffett said, right, and there's a complex thing going on here, isn't it? There's a lot of things going on. It's not easy to understand. It's very many moving parts here. And I always remember Warren Buffett saying that, or the quote, it's attributed to him, but... you know, investing is not like Olympic diving. You don't get points for difficulty. You know, keep it simple. And debt adds a level of complexity. And you've got these moving parts now. It's not a cash out or investing company. For me, it's not for me. I'm stepping back. Not for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. And I mean, you know, as you and I well know, just, you know, we go back, we look at Thomas Cook, which worked as a recovery play for me first time around and for other investors. And second time around, of course, it was done. It was, you know, it hit the end of the line. But for Stobart's, you know, I think the efforts that have gone into this reconstruction, you know, just looking at the fact that turnover has been barely affected in this most difficult of all years, been barely affected.
Are they making money though?
Yeah, they are. Underlying EBITDA grew 363% in the half year to 16.6 million. So they've also shed loss-making contracts. They've initiated pay down of debt, and they're winning new contracts. So that, you know, that to me, and the fact is that they're able to raise that money easily to become an investment company. So they can now continue. What the next step will be, I don't know. But at the end of it, they own half of the Eddie Stobart entity. So. If you just look at the fact that Eddie Stobart, formerly the entire PLC, was worth just under a billion,
we're talking about a different business, a different investment. You can never go back to a share price and say it was a quid, now it's one pence, let's invest, because it doesn't make any sense, you know, so it doesn't make a lot of sense there. So, fair enough, as long as you kick the tires out, and they've raised cash now, so hopefully, you know, you haven't got that worry about getting up one morning and seeing that the RNS is saying it's gone into liquidation, which happened with Thomas Cook because they were swimming in debt, you know. But
yes.
There we are.
Okay. I'm not saying that I do this with all of my portfolio, but you know, with some of my portfolio, I'm prepared to take a speculative contrarian view on a company that, and you know, it was the half year results that really that really for me underscore the fact that there was an opportunity here, because the turnover was barely affected and they're shedding those loss making contracts, so, and that they also expect to deliver full year EBITDA of at least 33 million. So if that continues to grow, then that's a decent margin. You know, we can then, but I think probably for the sake of investors and for the sake of peace of mind, they've got to deliver those numbers first of all, get those numbers out there, and then take the next steps. I do think we're going to see some movement on the share price this year, and hopefully the right way.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, so oil stocks. A lot of people have been talking. Yeah, I've seen some. There's been quite a bit of chat on Twitter over the past few weeks of recovery oil stocks. Clearly, you know, we all know what's happened with the oil price this year. You know, going to falling to zero back in quarter two. It's recovered steadily since then. Of course, we've now got Brent crude trading at about $46, $47 a barrel, and it has raised the prospective for a lot of these oil tiddlers, as I call them. And one such is NostraTerra Oil and Gas. NTOG is the epic code. Company has a tiny market cap of just over 2 million. The shares on the year have traded as high as 1.1p and as low as 0.42p. So we're currently trading at 0.35p. Currently trading at that year low now. And this is a company that has a number of operations across the southern USA, particularly in Texas and New Mexico. In the Permian Basin, it has working interests on the second largest field in the region, which is producing at least 75 million barrels of oil. It's taken its interest there from permit to production in less than 4 months. It also has the Pine Mills oil field, where it has a 100% working interest, and it's also the operator in it's a 2,500-acre site in Woods County, Texas. It's a farm out agreement in place there, and most recently in September announced the Cabalas Creek interest in Atascosa County, Texas, also a producing asset. So Cabalas, it's identified a number of new formations in that field, on the initial estimate that was undertaken of Cabalas, the recent discoveries or the recent work that's been done there has revealed that there are further reserves to those actually quoted in the initial find. The Pine Mills, there's a farm out agreement with a third party, Cypress Minerals, that are currently drilling a well on undrilled territory, Cypress will take a 25% interest there, an option to increase to 37.5%. So there are developments underway there. The work at Pine Mills has progressed. The drilling from Cypress has reached a planned total depth of 6,000 feet, the well has been plugged and cemented, that basically marked progress to the end of November. In December, the company announced December 21st, in fact, today, the company announced that with the increase and the steady growth in the oil price, the Cypress well was nearing completion. And as a result of the improving oil price, some of the other suspended wells across three areas were now back online. And the company was finishing 2020 in a much stronger position than where it started. Reductions in overheads, additional well production, should exponentially drive profits as we go into next year. Now, this is not a big producer by any stretch of the imagination. So the company is producing relatively small amounts of oil in terms of the number of barrels. Some 98 barrels of oil per day previously, and it's now down to 67 barrels of oil per day. But this is now increasing, and obviously with the increased price too, it's driving additional value and also improving the company's line of credit going forward. In September, the company also raised $500,000 with institutional and professional investors. Company is of course run by Dr. Stephen Staley, who's the non-exec chairman, formerly with Conoco and BP. He's also has positions at 88 Energy, Predator Oil and Gas, was involved in Fastnet Oil and Gas, and of course Cove Energy, that delivered some huge growth for investors a few years back. Matt Lofgren is the CEO, long-standing CEO, formerly with Robson Energy and also Elephant Oil, and John Stafford, former VP at Gulf Keystone Petroleum and ex Schlumberger. A strong team there. This is all about the oil price. If the oil price continues to rise as we go into 2021, then I think we're going to see increased production from Nostra Terra that could well see the stock return to the year highs of 1.1p.
Yeah, well, that's not, I was talking to Paul Hill just now on the podcast, and we thought, well, all it's not for both of us, because I'm into long-term trends. I think genuinely, there's a cracking trade to be had amongst oil stocks. If you're a trader looking at shorter term horizons, it's probably a cracking trade, post lockdown. And of course, like I said, again, you've got over the next 3 years, you've had lack of investment in exploration as well. So you've got slowly. I mean, if you look at demand, though, it's slowly creeping down for oil. Even next year, if you look at the Energy International site, got a good chart there showing it, and they show 2021 overall global demand, I think 2.5% or something like that, and that's a spike from previous 2020, because that was lack of demand and negative, and then it just grinds down. It goes every year, it's grown by about sort of a quarter of a percent every year, and then over the next sort of, I think they got pretty much in 2025, I think it was goes to negative. So the trend over the next 5 years, but it goes, I think next year, a couple of years or so, there's probably a good trade there to be had amongst many oil stocks,
Well, I think there is, I'm with you. Longer term, I think the outlook for oil stocks is pretty bleak given where we're heading. And when you've got BP, with its stated objective of when we reach 2030, 40% of BP's turnover and revenue will be coming from renewable energies. So that kind of really shows you the way that the oil majors are thinking at the moment. Well, they won't be oil majors when you come to 2021, there'll be 2030, rather, there'll be energy companies.
Clean energy majors. The thing is, big oil companies will be fine, because all they do is buy up hot tech in that area, and that's what they can do. It's like Facebook buying WhatsApp and Instagram, buying a younger audience, pretty much. So that's what the big companies will do. And I think didn't BP a while back, or Shell, or one of the BP? No, they bought one of the biggest EV charging networks in the country anyway. So they are edging into that space anyway. So marvelous. What's next, Al? Anything else?
Yes, just want to mention the Bidstack, and I think this is obviously we've discussed Bidstack many times, and of course the esports gaming area with Gfinity and all the rest of it. But this is an incredibly exciting area. One that I have to say, it's very much for the youngsters, and my son is a big gamer online, and I go and see the kit that he's got, and all the stuff they're doing. I just think, goodness me, well, okay, yeah, fine. But it's a huge marketplace. 150-odd billion in 2019, estimated to be 2,056 billion by 2025. And, of course, we've got 3.3 billion gamers worldwide as of now.
That's massive. They did a trading update, didn't they? And it's rallied on the fact that they mentioned the trading update. They were quite diminished. They've said the police report, subject to an audit, is on track to exceed market expectations in respect of revenues for the year ended the 31st of December 2020. Now, I like Bidstack. I invested in them. I got really excited about the tech. In fact, overly excited, probably. Overly excited, and people sort of said I ramped it a bit. But I just thought, very hot area. Tech within that area, advertising's very hot. People want to monetize this, and of course, James has come on the podcast and said, we've had some bumps in the road. The tech, of course, is working, but it takes a longer time to realize it. Revenue wise, monetization of it is taking longer. But so this gives a bit of a positive spin now. They exceed market expectations. But my question was, and I don't know what it is. And when companies say that, they assume private investors will know what the expectations are. I don't. I mean, I knew they went initially. Why I like Bizdat, initially they came out with I think it was like a target in the first year of like 5 million, yep, or in excess of 5 million originally, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. And so that's why it ran like crazy for the first year of IPO. You know, going from naught to zero revenue, pretty much to 5-6 million, was amazing. So of course the growth side of it was like, it's going to grow like hell, this company. And then they missed that. They had like 30 grand or 300 grand or something like that, and they missed that massively. And I knew they were revised down then, the next year's figures, and I don't know what they were. In my head is 1.6 million, so there's obviously a massive, and I don't know what it is. Do you know what the, I don't know what the actual revised figures were. So it's okay saying market expectations, but what are those expectations? I don't know what they are, you know?
Sure. Well, in the half-year numbers, they delivered revenues of 300,000. So at that point, the revenues would be very significantly second half weighted, and in line. So they said they were trading in line at the half-year point. The broker Stifel also at that point published a note with an initial 8.5p target, saying there was massive pent-up demand in the market. In the trading statement last week, James said they had seen greatly increased demand, and also these big clients. I mean, you know, they're testing with the biggest names in the world. You know, they're working with Dentsu, they're working with all of the major gaming platforms to create this new channel for advertisers. You know, and if it's taken up by all the major brands, which it seems that that's now starting to happen, it could be huge, because the companies and the platforms that are testing it are now moving from test to on-plan advertising. So ads are being placed, revenues are now being generated from these ads being placed with some of the world's largest video games groups. And yeah, James said it's been a step change, average value. But
what was the thing? Do you know what it is? Was it 1.5, 1.6 million? What was the target? Do you know?
1.5 is my understanding. That's certainly where I'm from. But also we're seeing this 5 million run rate. A lot of people talking about this run rate of 5 million. So whether that means that we're going to be sort of heading after the full year revenues come in, we're going to be hitting the ground running.
What do you mean run rate? What does that mean? Does that mean that order's gone through? Because that's not of course. What does that mean?
Well, of course, all orders are placed, but advertising campaigns are run at certain times. So that's basically, as far as I can see, the order, the potential bookings via the platform being averaged out across the year. So
that won't be recognised revenue, will it? I'm assuming, yeah. Okay, so let's. They're going to exceed 1.5 million there, which is not bad. If you did 300 grand first half year, then that's 1.2 for the second half, which is very good growth. And if it's, you know, it's good, isn't it?
Well, I think what's also interesting here, I was talking about this with someone else. The we're speaking about Myriad, of course, and you know the success that Myriad has seen, and they're inserting advertising content into live streaming programming. So the principles are quite similar. You know, Bitsacron have a platform that inserts it into gaming instead. So the principles are quite similar. But Myriad, of course, launched an OTC listing in the US, which immediately saw their share price jump up from 20p to about 45p, so almost doubled in value. And that's because technology investors in the US place a different rating and have different expectations for tech companies. They're far more bullish. Now, whether Bitstack will head down that route, I don't know. But it would seem to me the markets they're in they're going to be talking to the same people and the same advertisers at the end of it. So that could well happen. That's just speculation on my part. Of course, they've not said that at all. But if you look at the board of Bidstack, aside from James and Francesco Petrozelli, you've got Derek Wise, who's the former Grapeshot chief tech officer, Oracle, of course. And you've got an advisory board that's who's who of gaming. Andrew House from PlayStation, Will Cassay, Ad Corning and Walt Disney, Brian Nieder, EA Games, Gatepath, Jonathan Epstein, GameSpot, Joel Livesey, Trade Desk, AOL, Pete Beeney, Spotify. I mean, the list goes on. And all these people are on the advisory board of Bidstack. So I think, you know, that they're proving up the concept now. You know, the advertisers going from testing to saying, yep, okay, that's worked nicely. We're going to spend the money on a campaign now. They've got this advisory board saying that will be mapping out the next course of action. And I think Bidstack are now poised to deliver what James promised they would be delivering initially. So it's very exciting. I mean, there was a placing recently of 4p, and I got in at about the same level, so very pleased to top up at that level. And I do think this is going to be one of the companies, one of the shares for 2021.
Yeah, no, I like them as well. You know, I mean, like I said, I'm in Gfinity as far as sector is concerned. I like what John is doing there. He's really turned the company around. He's going to be now profitable, operationally profitable on a monthly basis. And I don't know if you saw, I did share with you, a guy after your own heart, Al, they signed a non-executive director. Now, listen to this. This guy is a phenomenal sign, I thought. Non-executive director. I'm in contact with him now on LinkedIn. Lovely guy. Hopefully we get him on the podcast. But Len Rinaldi, he worked at Apple for 12 years, right? He was general manager for Apple Western Europe for 7 years. He was CFO of Europe, Middle East, India and Africa at Apple. He took where the revenue went from 7 billion to 40 billion over the period he was there. And he's been all places. And basically, he's been given, what, 2 million options, which is a decent, not a huge amount. But if you look at him, I mean, what he does now, Hal, he basically has made so much money, he's probably getting paid by Apple shares and pension anyway, so he's probably very well off. But to come on board for Gfinity, why would he do that, you know? This guy is wealthy, and all he does at the moment, you'd love this, being a motorbike guy, all he does at the moment is ride motorbikes and do videos on them. It's a hobby. Basically, Apple pays for his hobby, pretty much, I expect. So he doesn't have to do anything, but he's decided to hook up with Gfinity, which is, let's be honest, a microcap, you know, esports company, growing very well, and he's very excited. And he says there that I'm excited to join the rapidly growing and ambitious business. There's clear strategic priorities in place. Gfinity is a strong business model that can take it to the next level. I look forward to working with John and the leadership team to help the business fully realise its ambitions. And you've got to realise, someone like that, who was in charge, was CFO of Apple, one of the biggest companies in the world, $1 trillion company, you know, CFO for Europe, Middle East, India and Africa, and then he was general manager for Western Europe of Apple. He's got some connections. You know, Apple are into gaming. All the big companies want to get into gaming because it's very fast. I mean, that's a very exciting, you know, appointment. And but as I say, you should check out his YouTube channel. What are they called? Lemon. He's got a site. Let me just get on here. Lemon Cross Cycles or something. But it's worth getting on there. I don't know most of the bikes there, Al, but they look nice. There's one he talked about where it's got a rev clutch. You know, a clutch where you turn the clutch around. But I mean, it's worth looking at there. But he was but check him out there. He's got his own website. He's involved in sort of tours as well, motorbike tours. So they do all that. But but it's been lovely to basically. My hobby is shares, so I love to do it anyway, so I'm sort of paid to do shares. But to have that ambition of just, you know, motorbikes, and you are paid to basically indulge yourself in that hobby is lovely, isn't it, you know?
It's fantastic, but as you rightly say, you've got the guy's business credentials. The fact he's joined Gfinity, where at the level it's at, it's a fantastic opportunity. But it's also a ring endorsement for Gfinity. You know, in the same way that Derek Wise, Grapeshot, you know, look at his track record. He came into Bidstack. You know, this guy is going to do the same for Gfinity, and also, you know, of course, the advertising platform that they've developed from a standing start. I think it was 200,000 in the first month they generated from nothing. You know, it just shows the power of the brand. But
the digital media side, which is, they own that, of course. They also do the platform for the companies and, you know, partnerships and brands who want to get into esports. They host that. They can do, they got their own tech there, but that's growing so quick. Digital media company didn't exist before May, and now it's going to do 2 million in the first year. And that's one third of the business. And yet, it literally did 275 grand in November. And they said December strong as well. So that's amazing growth, you know?
That really is. But I wholly endorse it. Of course, I would, being a biker myself, but wholly endorse his move into bikes. And I think that there is, you know, a lot of people are realizing that there is a big market here. I recorded an interview with Paul Jason a few weeks ago, where we compare classic cars to classic bikes. And there's some really interesting data there. In fact, when you go to Vox Markets, look on my Vox Markets profile, you'll find the interview there. If you're interested, there's some there's some data from the market, the actual sale prices, auction sale prices. We've just put it all together, and makes an interesting survey. But we just bought another bike called an NC30, which is a mini RC30, which was a Honda race bike from the 80s and 90s, and we'll be putting some videos out on that in the next month or so. So watch the space.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, Al. And everything you hear in this podcast is, some of it's nonsense, some of it's not. But yes. do your own research. And, we can't endorse anything as an investment advice, but there we are. That's just ideas. Some ideas are good, some ideas are bad. You know, it's like, Al, for example, if you bought a classic bike, so I know what I'm going to do, I'm going to paint it all pink. You know, it's an idea. It's not a good idea, maybe, because it's not the classic colours of that motorbike. But it's nice. So some ideas are like that. Some ideas are just doing up, a former bike to its historical glory, and that's in the classic way it was intended to be. And that's a good idea. You know, so that's what I'm saying. Investment ideas are the same. You know?
They are indeed. But well, a final note. Nick Mason from Pink Floyd bought a Ferrari 250 GTO for £70,000 in the 70s. Everyone said he was mad. Should have bought a house in Wimbledon. Ferrari 250 GTO today compared to a house in Wimbledon. House in Wimbledon worth about $2.5 million. Ferrari GTO, the last one sold at auction for $75 million. So
Oh. Cool. Marvellous, Al. Thanks for that. And in fact, when are we speaking next? What a day is it next week? Is it markets open? We'll have to find out. But have a nice Christmas, Al. And we'll speak you next weeky, maybe.
Have a great Christmas. Peaceful, prosperous new year. But we may speak next week, but if not, certainly in the new year. Have a good one, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are. At five, Supply at Me Capital, down 8% to 0.455. At four, Novacyte, up 10% to 9.15. At three, Serenus Energy. SCNX ticker, they're down 2%, 2.3. I'm not quite sure how you pronounce it. Serenus Energy, probably. At two, Rambler Metals and Mining. That's up 4.6%. And at one, Trackwise Designs. It was up 7% today, but I covered that in the weekend on my video. It's my first EV investment. Of course, the electric vehicle revolution. Getting a bit of exposure to that. And top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Let's have a look here. It is at five, Novacyte, new COVID variant. At four, Metal Tiger, investment in Catalyst Metals. At three, Bahamas Petroleum, commencement of drilling at Perseverance 1. Two, Escape Hunt, digital strategy surpassing expectations. And at one, GlaxoSmithKline, VIVV, first long-acting HIV regimen approved in the EU. Let's look at the most read RNSs are as well. They are Alba Minerals, Dev Clever, Boohoo, Amigo, potential scheme of arrangement. At two, Avacta license agreement. And at one, it's Novacyte. And, Escape Hunt said as well, digital strategy, surpassing expectations. That is amazing. I don't think people understand that. I talked on the podcast there. Digital is so much more scalable. The margins are bigger. You know, so they did, at one of those digital events, they hosted over 300 people. And that was like the equivalent of 57 escape rooms, physical escape rooms. And you can do it globally. So it's a big deal, I think, that people are catching on to. And they did it, initially, to limit the downside of COVID and the lockdowns of their physical sites. Turns out it surpassed expectations, and now they're investing in it to be a major part of the business. So it's a good good result there. Anyway, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.